Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto hosting Mushing Radio from Willow, Alaska, and we have a guest calling in today. Her name is Michelle Hogan, calling in from Manilchik, Alaska. Michelle, how is it going?
Good. How are you?
I am well, thank you. How is the weather down there on the peninsula?
It is rainy and cold, which is perfect
for fall training. I know. That's what I was going to say. It's kind of breezy up here, too. I'm itching to get out the ATV and get rocking and rolling. How about you?
Oh, yeah. We've already gone on some short runs already just for fun early in the morning. So, yeah, we're getting going.
So, if you will, before we get started, Michelle, tell our listeners who you are and what you're all about.
Well, I'm a lot of things. I'm a mom of 8 kids. I'm a dog musher, and I'm a writer. So, yeah, that's what I'm all about, I guess.
You know, we followed each other on Facebook for quite a while now, and I am inspired by your story, your guys' family and tenacity with all that you guys have gone through just to make it to Alaska to chase this crazy mushing dream that so many of us have. Let's start with that. I know you've mushed before down in the lower 48, but what got you to move up here to Alaska? And how did you get up here, and what did it take to do so?
Well, I did. I was mushing in a low 48 in Wisconsin, and then before that in Vermont and Maine. And we lived in Wisconsin for a really long time. And we were renting a place, a farm in a great little town in Wisconsin, and we loved it there, and I got to do a lot of the mid-distance stuff in the UP of Michigan and Minnesota and all that. And then the people who owned our farm foreclosed on, and we had to get out. So
wow.
We had like 30 days to decide where we were going to move to. And then I found out I was pregnant. So we decided we were just going to take a cross-country trip. We didn't have enough time to get everybody passports to get to Alaska. That was our ultimate goal. So we actually just went across the country, and we ended up in Washington State for a year. Had the baby there, Anais. She's 18 months now, and kind of made our plans to move up here.
So when you finally moved up here, for folks that don't know anything about mushing on the peninsula, where is Manilchik in relation to Anchorage, Willow, Fairbanks, et cetera?
Sure. Anchorage is about 200 miles north of here. We are between Kenai, Soldotna, and Homer, so we're like right smack in the middle of the peninsula. We actually live in the Caribou Hills, and Manilchik is on the coast, and we live up in the hills, kind of where there's a lot of trails and a lot of popular snow machine area up there. So, we're way off-grid, kind of way out in the middle of nowhere. We border a lot of tribal land and the Kenai Wildlife Refuge.
So you're right there in the midst of a big 200-mile race, the Tustamina 200, is that right?
That's right. In fact, the midway checkpoint, Freddy's Roadhouse, is exactly 1 mile from my house. So we train on those trails all the time.
You know, that was one of the toughest races I've ever taken part in, was that Tustamina 200. I remember pulling into that checkpoint in Homer and saying, that's the toughest mushing I've ever done in my life. Those hills are no joke.
Yeah, they're not messing around here. I'll tell you what, I went out on them just on the ATV without dogs yesterday because I have actually never seen them without being on a sled. And on a sled, they're actually gentler than they are on just an ATV. There are some that I was definitely skidding on rocks yesterday and trying to decide if I was going to take that as an uphill or a downhill with dogs. And they're severe, definitely. But, you know, it's good training. It's a lot of fun, and it definitely isn't boring. So.
You know, what's interesting about your family, Michelle, not only are you guys living off the grid, as you mentioned a minute ago, But you have, your kennel name is called Crazy Eights Kennel, Crazy Eights Mushing. You guys have kids, is that right?
Yeah, we have eight kids. We actually only have five who live here at home with us. Three are older now and down in the lower 48. But, yeah, we have eight kids, five at home. They homeschool and pretty much do everything with us.
Wow, that is cool to have. Is it a family affair?
Mostly. My husband, he says he's in charge of logistics, and he doesn't really do a lot of mushing, but he is like the go-to guy to fix anything. He puts together all the dog houses. He's putting together the dog box. He does all of that stuff. And he is like my main handler when it comes to races and that kind of thing. And then Liam is my son. He's 16. He's entered in junior Iditarod, and hopefully we'll do the Solstice 100 in Fairbanks in December. And then Jack and Kira and Seamus all would like to do, you know, like some shorter junior races, and they love to push their sled around. We have a couple of miles around here that they can just kind of go around on a loop and do, and they love that. So, yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. So when you live off the grid, how off the grid are you? Tell folks about, you know, what it's like in the day of the life of the Hogan family. Are you guys you know, fetching water and starting up generators? What's going on over there?
Yeah, we are fetching water and starting up generators. We have both my husband and I are fortunate to work from home. And so the only requirement we really had when we moved to Alaska was that we had to be able to get internet. So whenever you see that little thing on Facebook that goes around that says, I just want a cabin in the middle of nowhere with Wi-Fi, that's how we are. So it's kind of cool. We don't have running water. Our water is about 2 miles away. So we go and we get that. We go get it about every other day. We have enough containers to last us and the dogs for 2 days. So we do that every other day. And then we melt some snow. We didn't have a lot of snow to melt last year, so we hauled a lot of water for the dogs. And that, of course, increases as training increases. But during the summer, we try to collect rain. We try to do, ecologically sound things, collect a lot of rain and water plants with that kind of stuff. We reuse, we use our dishwater. We use a biodegradable soap so that we can water plants with that kind of thing. We have a generator. And we live about a mile off the road. So we can drive in now, but when the trail gets bad, we live, it's not really like a road. We have like a seismic trail that goes into our house. So we have to snow machine in or take a dog team in and out most of the winter. So, yeah.
So I know from your Facebook post that you absolutely love it, but what do the kids think about all this, being out in the middle of nowhere, so to speak? What about friends and, getting to hang out,
right,
that sort of thing? How do they feel about all this?
I was really worried about that at one point. We first of all, have a number of friends around here. We've been very fortunate to meet people who homeschool, and they have, some groups of friends. We have a swimming pool in town that we are able to do, like, a homeschool swim once or twice a week. So we can all go down there and swim, and then we all get showers and do that stuff. We have, a really great library where kids, can meet up with other kids and lots of other things that they're doing. But I was definitely worried about that, especially this winter. We had we'd kind of been stuck where we were. We couldn't really get out. The trail was kind of melting, and we weren't able to move around a whole lot. And I felt bad, and I remember asking all of the little kids. I was like, do you guys ever want to, move back to the city? And, because we used to live rurally, but not this rurally.
Right.
They screamed at me. They're like, no, we want to be sled dog mushers. We want to live in Alaska. I'm like, okay, never mind. I won't ask that ever again. But, it's great. I mean, we have a really tiny house now. We used to have a 3,000 square foot house. We now have a 400 square foot cabin with a loft, So I was definitely worried about that kind of stuff, but it's not really been an issue at all. We were pretty cooped up all winter, and, John and I have always said that all of our kids always seem to want to be within 10 feet of us all the time anyway, so it never really mattered how big our house was, and that's just kind of how it is.
You know, people ask us all the time, how far do we live from the grocery store? And we tell them about 30 miles, and it's to Wasilla, to the first major grocery store. And, it, you know, for folks that live in the city, especially in the lower 48, that's astronomical to them, where they can just walk
right
in and get a bill for, you know, pick up groceries every night before dinner. But it's not like that where you live, is it?
No, it's pretty far. We do about an every 2 week stock up for dog food and people food. So we kind of always come back into Nanilchik looking like the Clampets, but we usually do anyway, so it doesn't matter. We go out, we stock up for a couple weeks. We do have a small store in town, so, you know, if we need a gallon of milk for something or whatever, we can do that. But there's not a lot down there. We just do the Kenai thing once every couple of weeks, usually on payday, and we all go out and, you know, act like city folk and go to the park or the, you know, eat out for lunch and do the laundry and do that. So it's pretty much a whole day affair. It's not a big deal. Actually, I grew up in Vermont and spent a lot of my time there. And Vermont is, you know, it's about 45 minutes from where I live to get to a store. So it's, you know, it's not really like I came here from having a store around the corner and didn't know what that was like. So I'm fortunate in that way to have kind of grown up that way. It's like an hour and a half to Soldotna, because it's only, I mean, just to get into Nanilchik from where we live in the hills takes half an hour. And then from there, you still have to travel up the highway. So it's a ways.
We're talking to Michelle Hogan today here on Mushing Radio. She is a up-and-coming Yukon Quest musher. We're going to talk about that in just a second. Lives in outside of Nanilchik, Alaska, a little bit south of Kenai, Soldotna, the bigger fishing areas that most folks know about if they've seen it on TV. Before we get into our mushing questions, Michelle, tell us a little bit about your books. I know that you're a pretty accomplished author. You've got several books out. Is that your paying job gig? Is that what you do for a living? And if so, tell us a bit about that.
Well, yeah, it's pretty much, words are pretty much how I make my dog food money and my, I call it kid field trip money and dog food money. I've been an author for about, well, I guess I really started seriously writing in 1998 and eventually worked for a newspaper and was the newspaper editor after a while. And it was called the Green Bay News Chronicle. It was a fabulous newspaper in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And then after I did that, I started writing a column, and then people started asking me to write a book. And so I started putting together some stuff, and I ended up, my first book was called Without a Net. It was published by Viking in 2005, I think. And it did really well. It was about when I divorced my first husband. My kids and I ended up living in my car. And it was kind of just about what it was really like to be poor and kind of having grown up middle class and not really understanding what it was, you know, what that was like. Because I had always kind of equated, if as long as you had a job, you would have a house. But I had a job, but I couldn't save enough money to get a house. So we ended up camping out for 3 or 4 months. So that was what that first book was about. And it did pretty well. I did a lot of TV and a lot of radio, and I got to read my work on NPR, which was kind of a cool dream of mine, and you know, had book reviews in the New York Times and stuff like that. From there, I ended up just writing different kinds of books, a lot of parenting books, because kind of a niche I'm good at. Then I wrote a novel, and I recently finished another memoir just about my year of racing dogs for the first time. Because with all the mushing I did and all the handling I did for many years, I had never raced myself. I had always prepared other people's teams for racing because I had kids and little kids, and it was hard to do. So I just kind of had fun in the Midwest area with some of the races and just wrote a little book about that just to give people an idea of what it's like to be on the back of a sled and have all these crazy things go wrong, which is about what happened in my first year racing.
and that's very typical with all of us. Sometimes it takes several years before we really get it, before we get our snow legs, as I call it, before we become proficient in mushing. It looks so easy on TV, on YouTube, but it takes a considerable amount of skill to be able to drive a team of dogs for any considerable distance, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, absolutely. And it takes a considerable amount of experience just to kind of keep them. I sometimes call like fall training like kindergarten, and it kind of does feel like wrangling a bunch of kindergartners and trying to get them all going in the same direction and all, you know, thinking the same thing and all that, which is, you know, can be hard to do and definitely was a challenge for me. I think because training and racing are so different and, you know, that's the thing I'm stepping into now. But, you know, you kind of have to train like you race and race like you train. So we're learning all of that.
So you arrived in Alaska about this time last year, is that correct?
Yeah, almost exactly a year ago, yep.
So did you have any dogs in tow? If not, where did you get your brood of dogs now? And, you know, what lines, how old are they? Just tell us a little story about your kennel there.
Sure. I actually brought two dogs with us. That was it. One dog that was remained from my original kennel, Condi. I got her from Kelly Engel in Washington. She's out of Lloyd Gilbertson line. Then I brought with us Farina, is a Laura Daggero dog who actually went to Nome, and she's about 7 years old now, and she's a fantastic dog. She was kind of a dog that was being retired from a tour kennel, and then we brought her along, and I've actually put her in the team quite a few times. She trains with us all the time, and she loves it. So we keep her around. She's a nice, calm dog, too, to have with younger male dogs in particular. Let's see. I have a bunch of dogs I got from James Wheeler down here in Clam Gulch, and he had some dogs from Lloyd Gilbertson also, so I have a lot of Gilbertson lines. And then I have dogs from Tim Osmar, as he's a neighbor, and right around the corner. And I have most of my main string from Tim. And then I have a couple of dogs, two of my leaders. One's Ray Reddington, Lance Mackey dog, and then the other one is a Jesse King, Mike Santos dog. Both of them lead for me. And I have one dog that I bought from Hugh Ness on my way through Tok.
So definitely a who's who in the names of mushing in your kennel there in terms of
right.
lines there.
Exactly.
Which is good.
Definitely.
It's good to mix it up. Michelle Hogan is our guest tonight here on Mushing Radio. We will make sure that we post all of her links to her Facebook page and her very active blogs and websites here on the show page, and we'll get that at the end. But before we run out of time, Michelle, I got to talk to you about your racing this year. You had mentioned that your son is going to be racing in the Junior Iditarod this coming February, as well as the Solstice 100 up in Fairbanks in December. What are
right.
you planning on doing, and how are you going to get there?
Well, I am planning on the Connect 200 and the Copper Basin 300. And if I don't finish one of those, I'm going to enter Northern Lights and see if I have to do it. And then enter the Yukon Quest, the 1000 for this year. I know that sounds crazy, but I've done a lot of other stuff, and I've done a lot of 300 miles, 400 miles camping trips, and I want to, you know, try the adventure, so we're going to go for it.
So with the Yukon Quest, how are you going about this as a rookie? I know you're not a rookie musher. You've been doing this for a long time. But on paper, so to speak, you're a rookie at the Yukon
right.
Quest. How are you approaching this, and how is it changing the way that you've done things throughout the years?
Well, what's really interesting to me is doesn't really change how I train because I've always trained for long distance. In fact, that was one of the things that was frustrating to me in the lower 48 is that you had to even do really short races to get into longer races, and you kind of had to do this incremental racing. And it was hard for me because I trained my dogs for long distance, so I was getting, you know, massively passed by sprint teams all the time.
Right.
But so my training is going to stay the same. I'm confident in the training that I do, and I have a definite plan for that. Of course, I always talk to some of my friends to see what I need to make up for. Around here, it's fantastic because of hills and because there's a lot of that. There's also a lot of flats around here where you can really let them loose a little bit. But I feel good about the terrain around here as long as the snow holds up. And if it doesn't, we'll travel to find it. Other than that, the big thing for me is the logistics of putting together that long of a trip. For me, I'm the kind of person, and this probably comes from being a mom a little bit, who likes to plan for every eventuality, but then I have to remember that it's a race. So I have to say to myself, okay, I need to have this, but do I really need to have that? And those kind of things are the things that keep me up at night. And
right,
that's probably
right.
The only way I can, and I can only know it until I do it. And that was one of the main reasons I wanted to do it. Because for me, you know, I have to learn by doing. And the only way for me to go and know how to run 1,000 miles is to go and run 1,000 miles because you can't learn it any other way. So I'm just going to probably be a rookie bulge, massively overprepared rookie who goes really slow, but I'm up for that and I'm excited for it.
You know, one of the most difficult things in terms of the logistic planning, especially for 90% of the crowd, kind of the no-name mushers out there, is fundraising. It is a very expensive event to get into any type of long-distance mushing. How are you approaching that, and is it working for you?
How am I approaching it? Well, I put together a few things. People encourage you to do things like the fundraiser things on the Internet, and let's see, I did a T-shirt thing. I'm not terribly successful at fundraising. I'm not going to lie because nobody knows who I am. People who like books know who I am. So I'm actually having a book signing in the Nilchik, which is kind of more, you know, my way of doing it. I just pick up extra freelance work, and I fund myself that way. You know, my husband supports me, of course, and we do that, But no, as far as like the big fundraising push, it's definitely difficult. I'm always massively impressed by these people who can motivate people to give them money because I'm not good at it.
It becomes almost a full-time job in of itself. And like you said, unless you're a named person in any sport, it's really tough to get the followers behind you. Michelle, we have just a few minutes left, and I would like for you, if you may, talk a little bit about your son and his goals for Junior Iditarod. What's the plans for him?
Well, Liam doesn't really have, like, this major plan. He's not quite as obsessed as I am. I'm pretty obsessed as a musher. I have been for many years. Liam is way more casual, which I really admire. He's casual about the idea of racing. He's not casual about mushing. He's totally into mushing, and he knows the dogs really well. He's my number one handler. He has been since he was 12. He's so detail-oriented and really methodical. So I know he's going to do really well. But if you ask him, you know, because people will come up to him all the time, you're going to win Junior Iditarod? He's like, no, probably not. He's good with that. Totally fine. He just wants to do it. I mean, Liam does lots of really cool stuff. As a homeschooler, he's had some really excellent opportunities. He's a volunteer firefighter and doing that training and learning how to be an EMT. He's been a page in the Washington State Senate. I mean, he takes all kinds of opportunities. And for him, the Junior Iditarod is just like, I mean, just going to the picnic to sign up was just like a monumental event for him. And for him, it's all about the experience. And as it is for all of us, you know, to do the experience. But Liam really kind of gets into kind of the theatrics of it all, too. And that's really cool, and I like that. So, but he's really, I mean, he just wants to do the Solstice 100 to get race experience. And I'm happy he's going to be running the dogs in that race. And And he just wants to get out there and kind of have his name in the Junior Iditarod. I'm jealous. I wish I had had a Junior Iditarod to do when I was a kid. So,
if we can turn back to the dogs for just a minute, Michelle, how many do you have in your kennel currently, and is that going to be enough for your guys' plans this year with Junior Iditarod and all of the
right.
qualifiers as well as the quest?
Well, we have 23 dogs. And, you know, we're going to see. I mean, I'm not averse to running a smaller team. If I don't start the quest with 14, if I start with 12, I'm okay with that because I know that I'm really confident in the care of my dogs. And I know, you know, Copper Basin's 12 and Junior Iditarod's 10. So we have enough dogs definitely that we're training. Hopefully we'll remain injury-free through training. Hopefully we'll remain healthy. I mean, you always hope for those things. So hopefully it's enough. But at this point, they are such a tight, self-contained unit that I'm not eager to bring in a new dog at this point. I mean, I may look for another dog or two to add to the team. But I really feel strongly about taking care of the dogs that you have, making sure that they're trained properly and keeping them together as a cohesive unit. So that's kind of our goal for this season and for everybody to have a really fun time.
Awesome. Michelle, one final question for me. I ask this to all of our mushers, whether they are Iditarod winners or all the way down to our junior mushers. What is one piece of advice you could give to that mushers what is that one piece of advice you would give to that aspiring musher, whether it's the guy with a couple of dogs in the backyard with the cart or somebody that's packing up like you did to move to Alaska next year? What kind of advice would you give them? One piece, please.
Do it. You're not getting any younger. Just go do it.
That's a good one because, like you said, we are not getting any younger, and if you don't kind of bite the bit, it might let me pass by. So you got to watch
exactly.
out for that. So, if you can, what's one website where folks can find you?
Mushingmom.com.
Mushingmom.com. And make sure you check her out on Facebook. She also has a Facebook page for her kennel. That is Crazy Eights Mushing or Crazy Eights Kennel?
Crazy Eights Kennel.
Crazy Eights Kennel. And we will make sure we pass on all the links on her page. Michelle, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.